And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think that we're not going to be troubled with politics in the near future for the foreseeable future. And that's because of a staggering revelation that was made by a very important Pentecostal preacher this last week. I don't know if you noticed it, and on the theory that you did not notice it, I will remind you of it. This minister, whose name mercifully is forgotten, revealed that God has opened a portal above the White House and above Mar-a-Lago so that God can communicate directly and without distortion to Donald Trump. Now, doesn't that make you feel happy?
He's the new Moses at Mount Sinai. I wonder if there's thunder and lightning that accompany these communications.
I was trying to think of what it would look like, and the only thing I can imagine is that it looks like a diffuser that you have in a forced air heating system in a house, right? And so the sound sort of drips down.
You mean it doesn't? The message doesn't come in on a space laser, Jewish space laser, or something?
No, Jewish things are involved here. No, this is completely not Jewish, right?
thank goodness. This is a little bit more direct than the old Republican refrain from Massachusetts, where Cabots speak only to Lodges and Lodges speak only to God, or vice versa. Of course, they were speaking to God. They didn't say God spoke to them.
Exactly.
This completes the circuit.
Right. That's exactly right.
But we've had those pictures of these ministers laying hands on Donald Trump, and Paula White, the official spiritual advisor to the White House or something.
I think her title is God Whisperer.
God Whisperer, yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any snake handlers in that group?
There must be. We just don't know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? And somewhere in there, there's the 2 Corinthians, too.
That's 2 Corinthians. Well, that's right. He's on top. He's on top. Anyway,
yeah.
I just wanted to bring that up because I think people will tend to overlook it and the significance of it. The ruling group in the country is surrounded, infiltrated, and part of the kookiest humans who have ever been born.
Well, this is why they call it a cult.
That's right. That's right. But let's get back to actual politics and governing. We had a real example in the Pennsylvania budget, right?
Yes.
People don't like to talk about the budget, but really, the budget is the embodiment of politics. The budget is really the social policy, because that's what
you often remind us of that.
Yeah.
You often remind us of that. And, in some ways, it's kind of like the wisdom of Solomon, where they have to cut things and compromise things to reach an end. They were, again this year, the legislature was late. They're supposed to have a budget by July 1st, June 30th. And although this year, they were only a couple weeks late. Last year went into, what, November or something that?
That's right. So was it beneficial that it was sped up?
It depends on where you're looking at it. As in every case of this, there's winners and losers. We have a split legislature with the Democrats in the House and the Republicans in the Senate. It becomes, no one party gets what they want. But I looked at this and I thought that pretty much the Republicans did very well for group that did not, that only had one house in the legislature and did not control the governor. The governor wanted a budget of about 53 point some billion, and the Republicans wanted to hold it at or below 50 billion, and it came out pretty close to the Republican figure at $50.8 billion.
What did the Democrats give up?
Well, I'm just kind of reminded of the old Everett Dirksen line of a billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah.
We could talk about winners first. Education got a boost, but the legislature was under a court order to boost education from several years ago when the court found that they had underfunded school districts, certain school districts. Wilkes-Barre was one of the lead litigants in that lawsuit. They're still underfunding, but they're trying to catch up. And the other winner, so to speak, were state pensioners from the teachers and emergency people. Because years ago, when they were first given a pension, a quarter of a century ago, there was no cost of living increase built into it. It was a flat pension. And the only way they could get a cost of living would be for the legislature to not... And they didn't even put in a cost of living. They just said, we're going to give you an additional boost, a bump. They did it once before. And this is the second time they've done it in the last 25 years.
That means that the pension for these people degraded by an enormous amount.
Yes.
If you got a pension in the year 2000, you say it was 25 years ago, let's say, to years 2000, 2001, and you didn't get it, you didn't keep up with inflation, then $100, the purchasing power of $100 in the year 2000, in the year 2026, is $195. In other words, your pension, you lost half your pension in terms of purchasing power because of the fact that the index wasn't enacted.
Yeah.
That's dreadful.
Yeah. The thing is, though, if they had done this for cost of living, the budgets would have had to have been increased over time.
Yes, exactly. That would have meant the politics in the state would have been very different because retired people would have demanded that the revenue of the state be such that their pensions could maintain parity. After all, somebody's paying.
Yeah.
Somebody's paying. And in this case, it was the pensioners who were paying.
Well, let's not forget that the people who haven't had this problem are the state legislatures. Increases already built in that they passed a law that was very controversial, cost a lot of them their seats a number of years ago, where their wages, increase periodically. And therefore, when they leave, their pensions are based on those increases. So they continue to do well, but no one else does. By the way, I saw an article this week that there's a lot of money that's been put aside, I think several hundred million dollars, that's just laying there, having to do with state legislative pensions hasn't been paid out and didn't have to be paid out, but they won't bring the money back into the budget. They're just keeping it there on the side. I'm not sure it's the exact type of thing, but it's really an interesting phenomenon. But anyhow, I mean, there were more losers in this than winners. I mean, what Josh Shapiro got out of this is he can claim he balanced the budget again. But he wanted to have a higher budget. He wanted to raid the rainy day fund. They didn't do that, except for to a minor extent. He wanted skill games to be taxed. That wasn't done. And the legislature split on that. It's an important source of revenue, but they can't agree on how to tax them. They didn't allow for recreational marijuana and the tax money that would bring in. They didn't increase the minimum wage. Pennsylvania is the only state in our region. Every surrounding state that borders us has a higher minimum wage. They kept the sales tax break for data centers. Everybody in Pennsylvania now is railing against data centers, but they keep giving them a sales tax break. And they didn't change
that. And the break amounts to hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
All of which is denied the counties that need the money. And especially Lackawanna County, where they project 8 data centers to be built. God knows if they will be, but they're projecting 8 data centers to be built, all of which have enormous 10-year tax breaks amounting to hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And Scranton's broke.
And there's another one. Well, Paige Cognetti wouldn't say that she's broke, but she says she balanced the budget and increased salaries and what have you. So, but still, these data centers are extremely controversial. There was another article this week that there's another one that that somebody's trying to push on within the county. Archibald and Dixon City are the epicenters of that sort of stuff.
Right, but there's one at the northern edge of the county, bordering Susquehanna County in a township.
Right. Around Forest City or somewhere around there.
Yes, exactly, which is very controversial there. Well, they're all very controversial.
Yeah, yeah.
By which I mean the majority of the people who live in the areas are against having them.
That's true.
That's the nature of the controversy.
And yeah, and this is festers, why people hate politicians.
Yes, that's right.
But there's no shortage of people wanting to be politicians. We found that out this week with the Democratic Party in Lackawanna County, which has been a mess ever since the resignation of one of the county commissioners. And the infighting.
Who got elected to be a county commissioner because he was a famous football player, not because he was any kind of a political leader.
Right. McGloin.
And once he was in office for what, a year, he quit.
A year and a half, something like
half.
That.
Yeah.
Well, he said he got a job up in Boston as a coach. And then his wife apparently didn't know about it and said, "We're not moving." And then his pride wouldn't let him withdraw his resignation. So they went through this fight between the old guard and some of the new guard. The old guard kind of won. The old guard lost the legal battle. They had to have an election, but the old guard won the election.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Welby, and mm-hmm. now there's fighting over the fact that another county commissioner, the Republican minority commissioner, who actually may be functionally a majority commissioner, wants to become the head of the airport, mm-hmm. the executive director of the airport, the joint Luzerne-Lackawanna County Airport, which means he would then resign as commissioner. But he's on the board that has to select the new executive director, so he withdrew his ability to do that as a conflict of interest, and they had to appoint a new commissioner or a new airport on the airport authority they had to appoint in order to keep Lackawanna County having the same number of votes, and they wound up appointing attorney Chris Munley to that position over the objection of County Commissioner Bill Gaughan, who I don't think objected to Chris Munley as a person, but he objected to the process that was being done. So they're still fighting, but then they resolved the fight in Lackawanna County over the party chairman. Chris Patrick, very controversial guy, decided he wasn't going to run again. Matter of fact, he said that last time, but he did run. But this time they had to come up with somebody new, and there were only two candidates, two women, neither of whom really represented the old guard. One of them, Larissa Valonis, who's a councilwoman in Archibald and has worked on a number of campaigns, came out the winner of that. She was connected mostly with state legislators. She had worked with former Senator, State Senator John Blake. She was most closely associated with Kyle Mullen, the state rep. And my sources say that the state reps got together, the Democratic state reps, and pretty well drove the process, although there was some input from the old guard through Senator Marty Flynn, who was John Blake's successor. But they, you know, it's a new ticket and hopefully a new outlook on things in Lackawanna County, a more activist role in promoting the party and party players. We'll see whether the divisions heal up. Valonis made an outreach to her opponent, Lexi Kelly. And Lexi heads the dissidents from Lackawanna County, from the Abingtons. And we'll see how they are, because there's 76 of the dissidents on the county committee, at least.
What does it mean in terms of policy? Anything?
Not so much as it means endorsing candidates and hopefully boosting Lackawanna County registration of Democrats. We're still one of the counties that has a Democratic advantage. Luzerne County lost that. But they're going to have to do a lot of work to overcome what's been this trend in not only Luzerne County, but throughout the state of Pennsylvania and in somewhat in Lackawanna County. I think it was somewhat of a victory for the new state chairman, Gene DePasquale, is he got this thing resolved. And he's been working somewhat to change the registrations. He staunched the bleeding. And there is some growth in Democratic registrations, but it's been small. It hasn't matched what the Republicans have been doing over the last 4 or 5 years. But those things take time. You can't right a ship overnight.
The problem with things like that taking time was exemplified by the speech that Trump made a couple nights ago. I guess Thursday was when he made the speech, which he trumpeted as revealing new information, startling information about the corruption of the electoral system and how he was going to save the electoral system. And of course, most of the radio and TV stations didn't cover the speech because it was regarded as a partisan speech and not a speech of national policy. But the speech actually, if you took it seriously, indicated that, first of all, there is no threat to the integrity of the elections because he couldn't produce any evidence that there was. But what he did say was, if it looked like the Republicans were losing in any given area, he was prepared to seize the ballots and not count them. That's what it came down to. I think that's pretty serious.
Well, he wanted to scare people.
He scared me.
But people were scared for different reasons.
Yeah.
And again, it was interesting that while he tried to place the blame on the Chinese for rigging elections, the evidence they produced showed it was the Russians that were trying to rig the American elections.
Excuse me, it's also the Republicans.
Yeah, who were playing footsie with the Russians in this. And what he couldn't explain was why, when the Democrats were in charge nationally, Barack Obama or Joe Biden, he won the presidency. It was only when he was in charge that Joe Biden won the presidency. He didn't have a good explanation of that, except for the fact that he said information was withheld from me by the deep state, which, of course, he controlled the deep state because they were his appointees,
yeah,
the people in the national security positions. So it was stuff that really didn't make sense. But
none of it ever makes sense.
No, but the thing is, and the folks that really track this, like Mark Elias and some of the Democrats on intelligence, what they're saying is he's laying the groundwork for undermining the 2026 congressional elections. He knows he's probably going to lose them. And what he wants to do is say that there's reason that the based on it's the Chinese to go in and seize the ballots and prevent these elections from being certified on the state level, or even if they are certified, go to his toady, Mike Johnson, who has to, as his last act of the old Congress, recognize the results of the election so the new Congress can be seated. And if he doesn't do that, what he's going to say is that the Democrats who won the elections can't become congresspeople, and then they can't function. And they're, you know, what is he going to do? He's going to say, I'm going to rule from just the executive branch that the Congress...
I don't think he has to say that the whole Congress doesn't function. I think all he has to say is that those Democrats can't be part of the Congress.
Right.
The Congress can function with the Republicans that have been elected as the only members. Right.
Yeah, you're going to have 199 people voting in the Congress out of 435.
Right. And that's totally legal, by the way.
Well...
We've had that. I mean, we've had cases where Congress, duly elected people to the Congress, have not been seated for one reason.
But that wasn't by fiat, okay? That was by a vote of the members of Congress who were elected.
Do you doubt that the Republicans who would get elected to Congress wouldn't respond to Trump's demand that they not seat the Democrats?
Yeah, there's nothing beyond... these Republicans who, you know, won't stand up to Trump.
But by the way, we've had this in the 20th century, that this happened in New York State, for example, in the 1920s, seven Socialist Party members were elected to the New York State legislature. The legislator refused to seat them, and they never took their posts, disenfranchising the people of seven districts of New York State. That happened.
But that was... You know, that was different.
Why?
I'll tell you, it was different. It was based on what they stood for, not on the vote that they received. This is going to be based on the vote. They're going to say the vote was illegitimate, not their policies.
Oh, but that doesn't matter. It's the policy that they care about.
Well, I understand that, but those seven people, they won the election, they were certified, but the legislature then invoked its power not to seat.
Exactly.
Here, what they're invoking is their power to say that the election was illegitimate in itself. And that's a more serious, that's a structural democratic point rather than a policy point.
But in the final analysis, the way they're doing it is by saying we will exercise our right not to seat.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it may be a distinction without much of a difference, but it's still a distinction.
All right.
That goes to the politics.
But the result is exactly the same.
Yeah, the result's the same.
Yeah.
Now, we had an example talking about doing Trump's bidding this week in congressional hearings for Todd Blanche and for Jake Layton, Attorney General and Director of the National Intelligence, where neither one of them could mouth the words Joe Biden won the election in 2020. They played this game of, well, Biden was, you know, was sworn in, or he was the president, but not that he won the presidency.
Right.
Because that is the litmus test. That is the one thing that you cannot say if you want to work for Donald Trump. And as a matter of fact, all throughout the government where people are applying for jobs, there's that loyalty test. In the applications themselves, the first question is, who won the 2020 election? And if people, you know, don't say Donald Trump, they don't get the positions. It's sick. It's perverse, but it's there. it's there.
Autocracies don't just
Yes.
sort of appear out of nowhere. It's a
No.
process,
Right.
step-by-step process. It's only
Yeah.
at the end that you say, my God, look what we've got.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, 2 years have gone by in which this process, continued, because that's what it took. And unless there's an opposition to it that stops it, it happens. And then people act as if, it was inevitable. It's never inevitable. If you fight these things every step of the way, you can stop them, but you got to fight them.
And if they and what they're hoping is that they get an overwhelming vote, like they did with Viktor Orban in Hungary, where it becomes impossible for the autocrats to fight the will of the people. We're going to have to see on that.
Mussolini didn't take power immediately upon organizing the Fascist Party. The Fascist Party was organized, or the fascists were organized in 1919. The party wasn't organized until 1920. They didn't enter the government until 1922. They didn't abolish the government until 1924. Outlawed all the parties, outlawed elections.
But the thing is, that Trump's been working much faster than this.
He
He's
has.
had
He
that.
has. Well, Mussolini had to invent it all. He was the first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Trump had it invented for him, Project 2025.
Exactly. But
And
they had examples.
They had examples.
Yeah.
But we have all these examples of autocracy and cultism that we talked about. That we have
Yeah.
this dollar coin now that's being minted with his face on it that goes
Yeah,
against
that's all
the
part of
law.
it. How about the fact you told me that Trump endorsed Mike Lindell for governor of Minnesota? Mike
Yes.
Lindell doesn't vote in Minnesota. He doesn't live in Minnesota.
Yeah. But those are mere details,
Details.
details.
Ken Paxton, who's running for Senate in Texas, votes from a place that is not where he lives and doesn't live in the place where he votes from. And that's been true for the last six elections, and everybody knows it. Who's rigging what?
But ultimately, the people don't. That doesn't seem to be the defining issue for the people who vote for him.
No.
Trump essentially preempted the voters of South Carolina this past week. Lindsey Graham having passed away, within 2 days he endorsed Lindsey's sister, and she was sworn in as the senator from South Carolina. And rather than have the interim election people running in Trump has now endorsed her for permanency in that seat,
Right.
which means nobody is probably going to stand up to him.
Not in South Carolina, no.
Not South Carolina, no, no.
Well,
we haven't even gotten to the the testosterone issues with Pete Hegseth. He's got a real masculinity issue. He really does on this. We're now, going to test people for testosterone. He hasn't said whether the women in the military, but he's essentially cutting them out of the military. He's refused to promote a number of women now in the Navy Department, and it's this war on them.
I
By
think
the
he's
way.
refused to appoint every woman who's qualified to be appointed.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been on the appointment list, and he takes them off the list.
Yeah, now Trump did appoint, basically, by proxy, Lindsey Graham's sister, but that sounds almost like a DEI appointment, doesn't it? Or a Nepo baby appointment?
Well, definitely
Like
an
that.
Nepo baby appointment, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah,
All
the
right,
very
we're
things
done.
that
We
they're
can't do
against.
anymore. We're done with this week. We can't appoint ourselves any more time.
All right, we will see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.